picture in there.
Should I stay or should I go? You say that you are mine.
Some people know the words.
Until the end of time.
Okay, that'll be cool. Just want to show how down with the kids I was. It's one music. It's no, two, no.
Yeah, very, very modern music.
Oh, okay. A bit before the time of quite a lot of people here. Now I think about it. Should I stay or should I go? When do we stick around? When do we persevere? When do we move on? That's one of the things we're going to be talking about today from this short passage here in Acts chapter 14. As we continue our tour through the book of Acts. Where are we? Just to say where we are at the moment. Paul and Barnabas have been down in Cyprus, and then last week, Stephen talked about their work up in Antioch, the city in Antioch. Now we're moving on to Iconium, and we'll see mentioned the cities of Lystra and Derbe as well. But we're going to focus on Iconium today. In Asia Minor, as it was then, Turkey, as it is now. The city of Iconium, where we're going to be today, is modern Konya in Turkey, 90 miles east of Antioch. It's a place that has abundant water, which in the region is a very valuable thing, rich vegetation, great prosperity in this place. Let's have a look at the passage and then talk about what it might mean for us. Where am I? Where's my passage? It was there. There it is. Okay. In Acts 14, Paul and Barnabas, moving on. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed. But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the other Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. The people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. There was a plot afoot among both Gentiles and Jews, together with their leaders, to mistreat them and stone them. But they found out about it and fled to the Lycaonian cities of Lystra and Derbe and to the surrounding country, where they continued to preach the gospel. What an interesting set of incidents here, and what might that shed light on for us? Iconium is mentioned a few other times in the Bible, so we've got some other references in Acts chapter 14. Some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium, so they got chased out of town, but some people from Iconium chased them further to the next place they went. And in fact, they tried to stone him in Iconium, but they managed to stone him later on, Acts 14, verse 19 there. For some reason, I put that reference twice. In chapter 16, the believers in Lystra and Iconium spoke well of him. That's about Timothy. So we know that Timothy's his suitability had spread across that region of different cities. And in 2 Timothy, Paul mentions Iconium one other time to Timothy. You, however, know all about my teaching, my way of life, my purpose, faith, patience, love, endurance, persecution, suffering, what kinds of things happened to me in Antioch, Iconium, and Lystra, the persecutions I endured. So this was an important place for Paul, important for the church. The church got established there and continued long after Paul had moved on. So wonderful things happened there as a result of Paul and Barnabas going. As a result of what? As a result of them being effective in their speaking. The verse here in chapter 14, verse 1 is a kind of, some people say they have a life verse. Well, they have some life verses, meaning they're verses that from the Bible that mean a lot to them all through their life. And this is one for me. Because of the role I've played for so long in church life, they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed. And I think there is a great place for effective speaking. Whether that's public speaking or speaking to one another, I think it's one and the same in many ways. They spoke so effectively. And what we're looking at today is the result of effective speaking, of sharing faith, of talking about Jesus, of talking about the gospel in an effective way. What happens when we're effective in speaking to people? Well, a couple of things. So they go, well, by the way, they are in a Jewish synagogue to start with, which this is a model of what it might have looked like, or a drawing, something like that. So a building, someone like that, is where they go. It says, as usual. That's their usual modus operandi. So the first thing that I'm going to talk about today is the fact that if we're going to speak effectively and we're going to know how to react, we need to understand that we're enabled by God. We're enabled by God. This is what it says about them, that they're enabled by God to do what they do. In verse 3, Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there. Even though they were opposed, even though the minds of people around them had been poisoned, they spent time there, they stayed there. It's an interesting thing to me that they didn't hear about the poisoning or see the people being poisoned and think, oh, well, we've done our work here, let's move on. When they saw the minds of people being poisoned, it actually made them stick around. They stuck around, and it says that they spoke boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. Enabling them. I think it's a wonderful phrase, to be enabled by God. I don't know about you, but I often feel like I am not up to the task of being a Christian in this day and age. I feel like I'm not up to the task of being a Christian in my own heart, let alone sometimes in my neighborhood or wherever I go, right? I find myself tongue-tied at times. I find myself not knowing what to say to people if they ask me about faith. Or even if they don't ask me about faith, how to start a conversation or how to continue with it. And what to do when you come up to an obstacle in someone's faith and you don't know the answer. And perhaps you get ridiculed. Perhaps minds are poisoned around you, towards you. Perhaps you get trolled online. There's lots of things that can happen to reduce our boldness, our confidence, and our expectations as to what God can do. And what we see here is Paul and Barnabas, they speak effectively, minds are poisoned, but they carry on speaking, they carry on working for some considerable time. It says, we don't know how long, but obviously it's more than a week or two. Some considerable time they stayed there, and they knew, I think they knew in their hearts, the work they were doing was enabled by God. I mean, God enabled them here to do signs and miracles. But doesn't God always enable us? Isn't the work that we do for him always really enabled by him? When we're trying to do it in our own strength, it's exhausting. It usually doesn't last if there is fruit. And it doesn't glorify God. And it's discouraging. So we need to be consciously enabled by God in the work that we're trying to do. So my question is this. So we're going to discuss amongst ourselves for a minute. How does God enable us today? That's the Greek word there, didomi, is the word enable. Okay, so how does God enable us today? I suppose. How does God enable us today? Okay, let's take 3 minutes. Can you talk to someone next to you? And then we'll come back and have a discussion in a moment. All right, 3 minutes on timing. Starting from now. How does God enable us today? Let's talk to your neighbor. Another minute. Thank you. Okay. All right. Time's up. How does God enable us today? What would you say? How do you know you're being enabled by God? What does it mean to be enabled by God? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Let's discuss that for a minute. What do you reckon? Patricia?
Well, we had a bit of a discussion around something quite a bit of an introspective way of looking at this, but we feel like our skills, our gifts, that actually we've got a talent, we've got a skill, we've got a particular thing that we like doing even.
Finding things that we're skilled at, gifted at.
And using them, yeah. Because who we are is who God made us to be.
Okay, so God's given us those things.
Exactly, so if we're using that, we're in tune with God already, because we're using something he's given us.
Yeah, okay, we're in tune with God.
We're making a difference from inside, not from what other people think about us outside.
Okay, coming from inside, from within us, God's already placed us. Okay, good, thank you, good. Other thoughts, how does God enable us today? Chantel?
He allows me to wake up with my right mind.
Yeah.
Some people in my household may raise an eyebrow to that. but I think I'm here with a sound mind. In order to come to church and listen to this sermon. So, yeah.
God enabling you to wake up in your right mind.
I like that.
That's a lovely. That's a sort of a testimony to the peace that passes understanding aspect of the way the Spirit works in us.
I would have dropped you in because you had a really good...
A good insight? Excellent. Good. We're looking for it. Which one of the three or four?
Similar to Patricia, like with talents and things like that, and yeah. So it enables us to sort of have awareness within that. Also, I think during like exams and stuff, it's enabled me specifically very much to be more concentrated.
To stay focused.
Yeah, yeah.
Clear minded.
I've been sort of just having a bit of a daydream during the exam and things like that.
Good for you. You got more exams coming?
Yeah.
Put some prayers on that? Okay, everybody. Everybody praying for you. Okay, good. Everybody watching on Facebook Live? Okay, excellent. You've got now, I have 2,000 odd friends on Facebook, so you have at least 2,000 people praying. Okay. Friends. Danny.
So we said a few things, two. What we mentioned but one of them was the fact he's giving us his word. He's giving us
his word.
The tools, which is useful for creativity.
You've got the tools.
Yeah. And also the fellowship. He's giving us
one another.
He's giving us the love that we have. And each other draws people in.
The resources and the love. And, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Leo.
And Joe was saying about the idea that we have confidence because we can approach God every day and we can approach the creator of the universe.
Yes.
So why should we be afraid of talking to anybody else?
Right. If we have the knowledge that we have a direct connection with the creator of the universe, why would we fear anything else? Okay, that, tell you what, I'm going to move on because that segues very nicely by the power of the Spirit into what I was going to say. What about this verse in Acts chapter 4, verse 29, right? When the church is being persecuted, right, a lot of problems. And what do they do? The church gathers together and they pray and they say, now Lord, consider their threats, those trying to oppose them, and enable your servants to speak your word with great boldness. Isn't that an interesting parallel between that and what we're looking at here in Acts chapter 14? Very similar circumstances. So I think what it suggests is the enabling comes primarily through prayer. Or perhaps it's even more fundamentally underneath that, an awareness of our connection with the creator of the universe, that he loves us, that he's with us, that he's for us, and that his spirit is with us. And of course, what happens in Acts chapter 4 after they pray this, that wonderful phrase, the building in which they were praying was shaken. And they all went out and preached the word boldly. That's what they did. So something about that, I think there are many things that can help us with being enabled when people around us poisoning or opposing, or there's challenges around us, but at least part of it is that connection with the Lord. I want to suggest three things we see in this section, just to point out, which I think one of the things that Paul and Barnabas do very well is they don't take it personally. You know, if we're going to be continually be bold and persevere in difficult times, we must not take personally the opposition. It's really opposition against the Lord. Although Paul and Barnabas are the focus of it, but it's really about God, isn't it? Right? So they don't take it personally. I think they do a really good job with that, and that helps us. We're more able to persevere when we don't take personally the opposition that we receive. Secondly, what do the apostles do? They preach a person, not a religion. They're talking about the Lord, right? That's what it says here. They speak about the Lord. Where's that phrase? It's in there. They speak boldly for the Lord. All right? They speak about him and for him, not about a religion. I think that's very important. And also they have a positive message. It's a message of God's grace. He confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them. So they are preaching a message of grace, and he confirms that message of grace by enabling them and empowering them. So I think there's something about that as well. That may be worthwhile thinking about when we get a bit discouraged or a bit fed up or we're not getting much response. Is, firstly, are we getting discouraged because it's deflating our ego? Are we getting discouraged because we're preaching about church and religion rather than about Jesus? Are we getting discouraged because we're not bringing across a positive message about the gospel and God's grace? Just something to think about from this passage. So the first thing that we see is God enables them. Let's talk about, just to finish off, the results of God's enablement. What happens as a result of this persevering and this enablement to continue to preach? Things, interestingly, don't get better. They get worse. We go from poisoning to a plot. A plot not to do something just vaguely nasty to them, but actually to stone them. Now, this is at a whole other level, right? So they decide to move on. How do we decide when to move on? Right, this is our next discussion. You've got another 3 minutes for this, right? So let's say you've had some poisoning, you've had some opposition, you've persevered, God has strengthened you. How do you know when to move on? They leave. They have been there considerable time. They've persevered through some persecution and difficulty. And then after this, they hear about the plot. It says they found out about it and fled. That's interesting. So is there a contradiction here? Are they kind of bold one minute and then fearful the next? I mean, what's interesting, what's going on? So when do we know when to move on from a situation? When to move on from trying to help persuade certain people? When do we know it's time to move on rather than persevere and trust God to enable us? 3 minutes. Discussion on that. All right? Okay. On your mark, get set, go.
Are you and they don't respond, then it's like you're not doing it. And maybe this is one.
So Maybe a good person to be with them. As well, Matt, at the moment, you know. I just, if they learn to respond from a text or they, maybe someone else will reach out to them, I'm hoping, you know.
I don't intend to become a writer or someone who says Jesus Christ. I may train another master, but it's too much to say how to check the dump on the
earth.
Yeah,
because they may not totally know. Yeah, just
we have a sign to, I don't know, they go to the dump to talk about it.
All right. Should I stay or should I go? Okay, so what do you think? How do we decide when it's right to move on? How do we know what are the signs? How do we make that decision? What do you think? How do we decide to move on? Okay. Be a sign.
Yeah.
If it's affecting you, in particular, perhaps it's causing a less than Christ-like response in you, or less than Christ-like attitude in you, that may be a sign. Yes, that's a really good point. Good, thank you. Other thoughts? How do we decide, Barry?
Other than that, we're living in an age of communication is different. We're not standing in front of people all the time.
Yes.
So we felt that there are times when person is responding and ask God to work on them rather than me and someone's saying, etc. Mm-hmm. But we don't need to detach ourselves because the keeping in touch with them on a periodic basis is so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know rather than turning your back on them walking away.
And that's another nuance perhaps in between these two things. There's perseverance and staying involved, there's leaving and leaving people alone, and then there's somewhere in between where perhaps we still have contact. But we're not directly involved in an active way. Right? So that's one aspect we don't see here. But yes, it's another option. Yes. Thank you. Okay, other thoughts? How do we know when to move on? There are times to move on.
I think when you say about, I think the enabling part doesn't stop. I think God enables us to have wisdom to be able to read situations or read, and to then think, okay, God's closing this door now, it's time for us to move on, whether it's a person, whether it's a situation, decision that we're making. I feel like he's still enabling.
It's still part of the same thing.
Yeah.
Right, so sometimes the enabling is about strength and perseverance, carry on. Sometimes the enabling is of wisdom.
Yeah.
Discernment.
Excellent.
That's true. Yeah, Dan.
I said that when they stop buying new coffee in Starbucks.
When they stop buying new coffee. So when is you buying all the coffees? Yeah, that's a dark day. It's a sign to move on. Other thoughts? The other way, Stephen.
I think I think it's from my experience, it's a rare occasion where God makes it very clear. Sometimes he does. It's very rare, but sometimes he does. He really just shuts the door and opens another one.
Right. Sometimes God shuts the door. Yeah. That's something we might need to pray about. God, if it is right for me to move on, would you please shut the door?
Yeah.
He may not answer that prayer directly, but he might. It might be the thing to pray. It's a tricky one, this, because I don't like this whole idea. I don't like this whole idea because it feels like if I'm going to move on from trying to reach out and help somebody, then A, I'm judging them. I feel like I'm judging them. And secondly, I feel like is it right to give up? God never gives up. And I'm not saying this is an easy thing, and I'm not doing a whole lesson on this point because it's too complex for just a few minutes this morning. But I think it's something we have to wrestle with. Is there are times to move on. Let me suggest a couple of thoughts. I think when you realize you're dealing with a cynic rather than a skeptic, A skeptic is someone who says, I'm not sure that's true. Are you really saying that's true? I'm not sure that's true. That's a skeptic. A cynic is like, there's no way you're ever going to convince me this is true. Because I have decided that everything that you're saying is rubbish, and I'm not, you know, I'm not going to... And I've had online interactions with people like this. So there was a time, and I shared this here before, that where someone was kind of trolling me, and I would give a reasonable answer to their online question to my YouTube video, whatever it was. I'd give a very reasonable and very calm kind of is considered response with facts, and I was very nice about it, and I would just get something quite vile back with no, it was clearly no, after a while it was clear there was no desire to learn. There was only a desire to wound. Now, I think that's a cynic. I'm currently engaged in an ongoing conversation with somebody else who posted something on one of my YouTube videos, and it's very different, because although he is very clearly not someone who believes what I'm saying is right, he's willing to discuss and engage, a very different spirit, so we're carrying on with that. And it's good for me, I mean, it makes me think, right? But when you hit a cynic, that's probably a time to not waste your time anymore on being with that person. I'm reminded of the verse in Matthew 7, verse 6, when Jesus says, do not give dogs what is sacred, do not throw your pearls to pigs. Mm. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces. Mm. Now, that's a wisdom thing, a discernment thing. Again, when is someone a pig? I don't know. I don't want to judge that. That's not a job to judge. But I don't think it's about judging when someone's a pig. I think it's about noticing what someone is doing. Mm. And the kind of person who's dangerous to you, to devour you. Pigs devour everything, right? That's the thing about pigs. They eat absolutely everything. Isn't it in crime dramas sometimes they feed the body of someone they've killed to a pig because the pigs eat everything? I'm not recommending that. I think I heard that somewhere. It was on TV, it must be true. So don't do that to anybody you know. But they devour. And I think that's the dangerous thing for Paul and Barnabas here is that they would be, it's not that they, I think, are afraid of the violence. It's that they realize if they are devoured by this, if they're stoned to death, they will not be able to carry on with the gospel, and they feel they've been called to go out and preach the gospel. So there's something about cynics in here. And I think maybe there's also the idea that if you're feeling this intense opposition, that maybe it's God directing you to new opportunities. How did churches get started in Lystra and Derbe and other places? It's because God allowed Paul and Barnabas to be driven out. So how do we find the open people, open to the gospel? It might be stopping spending our time with the people who are not, right now, open to the gospel. So sometimes it's God directing us to new opportunities. Let me remind you of this slide, which we showed 3.5 years ago at the beginning of our congregational life, of hearts, beds, and bucks. These three counties, there are 2.5 million people in these three counties. There are 1,130 towns, villages, and hamlets. There are 56 settlements with over 5,000 population in them. That's a lot of people in a lot of places. Maybe we need to think about our own lives and whether we might be spending too much time with some people who are more like a cynic than a skeptic and need to move on with it. Move on to reaching out to other people. In other houses, in other streets, in other locations. Maybe we're not being called to move house, but maybe we're being called to move on from a person. I don't know. That's up to you to think about, but it's something that we see here which enables the gospel to be preached elsewhere. So, wrap it up. Neither poisoning nor plots were enough to deter Barnabas and Saul. They didn't stop. They moved, but they carried on. I love the way that these verses are framed by these two phrases, as usual and continued. They went into the synagogue as usual, and when they get kicked out of town, they go to Lystra and Derbe, and it says that they continued to preach. Where's that verse? They continued to preach the gospel in verse 7. God is at work confirming the message of his grace. He's at work empowering his messengers. He's at work affirming his bold ambassadors. And we could add, he's at work redirecting their work when the time is right to move on. So things for us to think about, should we stay or should we go? Well, whether we stay or whether we go, we need to do it in the power of the Holy Spirit, which is available to every single one of us. Hope that's helpful. We'll carry on again with Acts chapter 14 next week.